Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Depression is a tough challenge. Many, over 27 million Americans, have turned to antidepressants for relief. But the little pills are getting some perplexing headlines lately. No better than a placebo, no better than sugar pills. Expensive Tic Tacs was the phrase in Newsweek. This hour, On Point, we'll look at the latest research on antidepressants and what it means. You can join the conversation. Have antidepressants worked for you? Are you sure? Does it matter if it's a placebo effect? What about side effects? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from New York is Sharon Begley, senior editor at Newsweek. Her cover story for the February 8th issue of Newsweek is The Depressing News About Antidepressants. Sharon Begley, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So here it is right on the cover, your cover, Antidepressants Don't Work. But then we read, and it's not quite as simple as that. What's the story here, Sharon?
Well, the story is about how antidepressants work, and whether you look at, you know, patients' testimonials or the reports from their doctors, there's no question that antidepressants have helped millions and millions of people who have taken them. The question is how they work, and this is the subject of, you know, lots of continuing research. And the question in a nutshell is, do they work because of chemical changes that they produce in the brain, or do they work because patients expect them to work, because patients believe in them, because patients have hope when they're given antidepressants? In other words, the effectiveness of antidepressants reflects a placebo effect.
What's the research that put this back in the news just now, Sharon?
What put it in the news most recently is a paper last month, January, in Journal of the American Medical Association, which looked at a number of previous studies comparing antidepressants to placebo treatments in patients who had mild, moderate, severe, and very severe depression. And all of those severities of depression are gauged by a standard depression scale called the Hamiltonian Depression Scale. And the question is, who did antidepressants help? And their conclusion was that only in patients who had very severe depression, and they make up about 13% of patients who have been diagnosed with depression, did antidepressants work more effectively than placebo. So that's what, you know, put this back into the headlines.
Meaning for almost 90% of people with depression that's less than very severe, what about them and antidepressants? What's going on there?
Well, with them, again, according to the research, and I should just put in an asterisk here, Tom, you know, it's very dangerous to hitch a story, let alone a conclusion, to a single study. So I just want to mention that research looking at how antidepressants work and whether they work better than a placebo goes back now more than 10 years. But anyway, so for the vast majority of patients, the implication is that if they seek help, and again, we have to underline that depression is not something that you just ignore. You absolutely need to seek help. But if they seek help, they could very well find just as much relief from their symptoms and just as great a possibility of improvement if they receive psychotherapy, even if they do things like physical exercise, even if they take a pill that they believe to be a true drug, but in fact turns out to be just a dummy pill. Again, the belief, the expectation factor here.
Americans spend almost something like $10 billion a year on antidepressants, and you're saying for a lot of people it may not be better than a placebo. What does that say? Well, we have an impression of an American system in which people go, they talk to their doctor, they're not feeling right, they're feeling depressed, and very often a general practitioner prescribes antidepressants to them. It seems as though that's become a kind of first line answer to feeling blue in this country. Is it a fair characterization, or is that a stereotype?
No, I think you've put your finger on a very important issue here. You know, it's easy for, you know, someone like me sitting here in New York City, which is, you know, psychotherapy central, to say, well, patients would in all likelihood find their depression treated more effectively through psychotherapy. Well, the sad reality is that most people in the United States do not have access to a psychiatrist, do not have access to psychotherapy. If they do, there are insurance coverage issues. If they are an adolescent or a child, it's even worse because there's a severe shortage of adolescent and child psychiatrists in this country. So, yes, antidepressants, writing a prescription, has indeed become a first-line therapy. I won't. We indeed would mischaracterize it if we say that all physicians are doing is, you know, is pulling out the prescription pad and sending patients away with a supply of pills. Therapy, psychotherapy, talk therapy is indeed recommended for most people. Whether everyone in the middle of, you know, a rural county in the middle of Iowa or North Dakota gets that, that's in question.
Expensive Tic Tacs is the catchy line from your story. Is it as really as bad as that? We're spending $10 billion a year on expensive Tic Tacs?
Well, a lot of these pills go for $4 each, and, you know, you can do the math every day for months and months and months on end. So, you know, you really have to ask, and we asked ourselves this, the scientists who are doing the research asked themselves this, are we doing anybody a favor by raising these questions? Again, because if a large part of the effectiveness of antidepressants is that people believe in them, then maybe, you know, we should adopt a don't ask, don't tell policy. Don't blow the whistle on them. But in the end, not only are they expensive, and, you know, Lord knows, I think we all have other ways where we could, you know, use our healthcare dollars, but of course they have significant side effects. And patients who experience those side effects and are torn, you know, should I continue, should I not, one hopes that this information is useful to them. But the most important reason for raising the concern about how antidepressants work is that as long as people believe in the magic of the little pill, and clearly millions of Americans do believe in that magic, then they are less likely to seek other forms of treatment which might be A, more effective, B, less costly, and C, more effective in that the rate of relapse is much lower. So again, as long as we rely on the magic pill, we might be closing the door to other more effective therapies.
Sharon Begley is a senior editor at Newsweek magazine, had the big cover story last week on antidepressants. Antidepressants, it said, don't work. Sharon, if you could stand by for a moment there in New York, I want to bring in one of the scientists at the heart of the report that's put this all back in the news. Joining us now from Nashville is Stephen Holland, professor of psychology at Vanderbilt University. He co-authored a recent study in the Journal of the American Medical Association, which found that for patients with mild to moderate levels of depression, placebos and antidepressants have about the same effect. Steve Holland, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So we'll look at what you found in your research, but what's your bottom line? If that's the case, is this a waste of money, all this $10 billion a year on antidepressants or not?
Oh, no. No, I wouldn't say that at all, and I sure hope that's not the message people take away from the arc we published or the literature out there. I think, as Sharon pointed out earlier, the question isn't do they work. The question is how do they work? And if I were to stop for a moment, I think the biggest problem with depression is too few folks get treated for it. Almost anything we do tends to help depressions, including antidepressant medications. The thing that we addressed in that particular trial is if you do the kind of very careful placebo-controlled trials and take a look at whether or not when antidepressants work, to what extent do they work for purely pharmacological reasons, then there's a pretty gradient, pretty good prediction, where as initial severity goes up, then the true pharmacological effect becomes more manifest. For folks with less severe depressions, as Sharon pointed out, it doesn't appear to be the case that the medications separate from pill placebo, and it's only when you get up to the higher levels of severity that you see that separation. But when you get to those higher levels of severity, you see some pretty considerable separation.
So separation meaning it works for those with severe depression, but for those with mild depression, what did you find? What does it mean that it doesn't work better than a placebo? That means it works, but not. Or I'm not sure what that means.
Again, it means it works for pharmacological reasons. Virtually anybody you put on antidepressants is going to do better than if you don't put them on the medication. But if you were to compare it to an inert pill placebo, where somebody thinks they're getting treated, they're working with a pharmacotherapist, et cetera, you don't see an advantage for having the active medication in the active pharmacological component of the medication relative to the pill placebo.
In other words, they could take a sugar pill if they were told that it would help them and it would have the same effect.
Exactly. It doesn't separate from the sugar pill at lower levels of severity. At higher levels of severity, it does, and it does very strikingly.
So what do you take from that, that we should be prescribing less? Because as Sharon points out, these antidepressants are not without their side effects.
Not without side effects. There are other alternatives to antidepressants, but the thing, psychotherapy, for example, but the thing to say in all fairness is that they probably don't separate from controlled, non-specific control conditions like placebos either at lower levels of severity. So it may be that you get to pick what you want to take in terms of minimizing side effects, and, or there may be other kinds of benefits. But again, the biggest problem in depression right now is that the big difference is between folks who get treated versus not treated at all, and that's where you get the biggest chunk of the difference. And getting something's usually better than nothing, and if you have a more severe and or perhaps more chronic depression, I think getting something specific is going to be necessary.
Sharon, we'll look more at this, but here we have Stephen Holland, who was right there in the research, and even for all that, sort of the equation between sugar pills and antidepressants, it sounds as though he's still in favor of prescribing them, Sharon.
Well, certainly for patients with severe depression. Again, Dr. Holland has seen in the studies he's looked at and conducted that patients with the highest level of severity of depression, there does seem to be an effect of the actual, you know, chemical in the pill, which is interesting because the assumption had been, or the belief had been, that depression is a particular chemical illness in the brain. It reflects, you know, what we keep hearing, too low levels of serotonin. And we had thought that the severity of the disease reflects, well, how low your levels of serotonin are. So it's sort of funny in the sense of, you know, a mystery, why the active compound, why these chemicals help patients with some forms of depression and not others.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about antidepressants and new research that says for many, they may not be better than a placebo, than sugar pills. But it's a complicated story. Sharon Begley is with us from Newsweek magazine, had the big cover story last week on antidepressants. And Stephen Holland is with us from Vanderbilt University, joining us from Nashville. He was a co-author of the recent JAMA article saying that for patients with mild to moderate levels of depression, placebos and antidepressants have about the same effect. Stephen Holland, I think a lot of people have this idea, as Sharon was saying just before the break, that depression's a chemical thing. You don't have enough serotonin in your bloodstream, and so you get depressed. We've all learned this phrase, serotonin reuptake inhibitors, you know, sort of keeps more running in your body, and so you're happier. What did your research say about that kind of popular view of what's going on?
Well, not necessarily our research per se, but the folks that are doing research on the actual underlying mechanisms, I think would say it's a little more complex picture. Certainly, the things like the SSRIs work initially by blocking reuptake, but what then happens is they start a whole cascade of other processes that happen postsynaptically and downstream in the brain, and some of them culminating in regeneration of neurons in the hippocampus, all of which is a very complex regulatory system. Now, that being said, there may be lots of other things that also move that system around, including quite possibly expectation and hope. In animal literature, we have pretty good evidence that even though you don't start by blocking serotonin reuptake, you might start with exercise or other kinds of things, you produce some of those same downstream cascades. So there may be a number of different ways to start biological processes going in the brain, some of them purely psychological, that start biological processes in the brain and that end up getting to the same final common pathway.
And Sharon, you were saying that only maybe 13% of depression is severe depression. So what are the other kind of symptoms that doctors are prescribing antidepressants for? I mean, we're reading about everything from sort of stress to PMS.
Oh, yeah, the so-called indications for which the pharmaceutical companies have received permission from the Food and Drug Administration to market their antidepressants, especially the SSRIs, has just ballooned in the 15 or so years since Prozac was approved. As you say, stress, PMS, you know, social phobia, I mean, just all sorts of things. It's almost anything that ails you, here's a prescription.
I want to welcome into our conversation now as well from New York, Robert Klitzman, a psychiatry professor at Columbia University, director of the Masters of Bioethics program at Columbia, author of When Doctors Become Patients. Robert Klitzman, thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
So I'm sure you've been reading along with everybody else and paying attention to this conversation and debate for a long time. What does
it say?
I'm sure. What does it say to you? Are we overprescribing antidepressants? Are they prescribed more often than their effectiveness would suggest they should be?
Well, just as mentioned earlier, it's quite clear that, as the two other guests here have suggested, clearly antidepressants work for people with serious, severe depression. I should also add that they also clearly work for people who have so-called chronic depression. That is, people who have milder symptoms, but where it goes on for 2 years or more. And for those people, antidepressants clearly work. The question is whether they work for people with mild depression. That is, where maybe just for 2 weeks they are feeling blue and maybe they can't concentrate, they have trouble sleeping, their appetite changes. And that's the gray area. And the question in the studies really comes down to how mild is mild, and how do you know if you fit in that category or not? And I would just also critique the study in JAM and some of the other studies by saying the following. That is that they don't look at long-term follow-up. We know that placebos may, for even mild depression, work initially for a few days or maybe even a few weeks. But if for people with depression, if you look sort of a month later or even several weeks later, placebos don't have the same effect in the long term as medications do clinically. There's also a higher chance of relapse. That is to say, if I'm depressed and someone gives me a sugar pill, I may feel better for a few days, but then I'll probably get depressed again. And that doesn't happen so much with antidepressants, we know. There's also a problem in that the studies only look at one measure of depression, which is a 17-question survey. The Hamilton Depression Survey. Well, there's a lot of other things that are important for knowing whether or not someone is depressed, whether they may benefit from depression. For instance, have they been depressed before? These studies don't look at that. And it may be that someone may say, you know, I've been depressed, really depressed many times in my life. I have mild depression right now for the past 2 weeks. Well, that person may be more likely to benefit from an antidepressant because they have a family history. It's also the case that because they've been depressed, and also if someone does have a family history, if someone says, you know, my sister's been really depressed, my parents have been really depressed, and now I'm feeling somewhat depressed, that person we think may have more of a biological depression, may be more likely to benefit from antidepressants. So these are some of the issues that make the picture somewhat complicated and make the study in JAMA somewhat limited.
With all that, do you think we're overprescribing antidepressants in this country?
I think that on the one hand, there are, as was mentioned earlier, half the people in this country with depression get no treatment whatsoever. Mm. And millions of those people would no doubt benefit from antidepressants. They no doubt have many of those people have serious depression. So those people are being undertreated. At the same time, are there people out there who maybe have mild depression where maybe they would benefit just as much from psychotherapy? Yes. There are probably people like that out there. So it's a complicated picture. There are definitely people who would benefit from antidepressants who aren't getting them. And there may be some people who would benefit from psychotherapy. But as mentioned earlier, most insurance covers very little, if any, psychotherapy. Many areas in this country have very low numbers of psychotherapists available. There's tremendous stigma and shame in terms of patients being able to say to doctors, you know, I'm depressed, I need treatment. There's tremendous shame to going to a psychologist or a psychiatrist or a psychotherapist, which leads doctors to more readily just prescribe medications. And also most people who get antidepressants get them, or a lot of them get them through their primary care doctor who may not have had proper training in how to give them and maybe giving them too readily. So again, these are areas we need to work on to educate people, providers to prescribe medications better to make sure that more people are able to get some kind of mental health treatment as well.
Stephen Holland, I want to get your response on that. I want to hear from our listeners as well. So many lined up here. Anne in Newton, Massachusetts. Anne, you're on the air. What do you know, Anne?
Hi. I've been a 20-year user of antidepressants. Okay. Somebody put it, a doctor put me on it when I was in therapy, and I'm not responding well to getting out of the deep places. And I don't think they're really effective, and I've tried to get off them several times and had no luck. And my personal feeling is that once you get on certain of these drugs, it's very hard for your system to regenerate what the drugs are doing for you if you get off of them.
What happens when you try to get off of them, Ann?
You get really depressed, profoundly depressed.
So you feel stuck even though you don't think they're working?
That's sort of my feeling, so I'm very interested in your topic. The other thing I wanted to bring up is the side effects. One of the things that happened to me is that I thought it was like a postmenopausal sweating,
mm-hmm.
and so they put me on estrogen. So not only am I on the antidepressant, but I'm also on estrogen so that I don't have hot flashes all the time.
Right.
And now I'm on sleeping pills because the medication I'm on, just I don't go into a deep sleep, so I'm sort of half asleep all night.
Oh, boy.
So I think there's a lot going on in your topic, and I'm really glad you brought it up.
Ann, you raise a lot for us, and I thank you. Stephen Holland, first to you. Ann says, you know, been on for 20 years, not effective for her, but she can't get off. It's got side effects. I mean, this doesn't sound like a good picture, Stephen.
Yeah. And it had to get down to individuals and what they experience. It gets even more complicated still. The fact that when Ann tries to come off, she feels worse may suggest that they are working, just not doing all the jobs she'd like them to do, and that when she tries to come off and she starts feeling worse again, that's because she's taking away the antidepressants. It's also possible that she's going through a discontinuation effect. I don't know exactly what the medications are, mm-hmm. but certainly some of them they're not addictive, but they're sometimes kind of tough to get off, and there are things that she could try. For example, adding there are a number of empirically supported psychotherapies that do have good data, and although there's not as much data supporting some of these psychotherapies as there is supporting the antidepressants, in that such the data that are there suggests that they work about as well for individuals, even throughout the full range of at least outpatient severity as the medications themselves do, and the data also suggests that the combination may work better than either one alone. So it might be that if she's having trouble getting off, both working with a good psychopharmacologist to make sure that they're carefully going through the step-down procedures, and perhaps adding the psychotherapy first and seeing if she can get a boost in other ways. It sounds like it's less than wholly satisfying, and simply coming off hasn't been the answer for
her. Sharon Begley, you can hear in Ann's story how important this is. I mean, people are prescribed, they're pointed down this path, get down the path, and it may or may not be working for them at all.
Absolutely, and the experience of severe withdrawal symptoms when people try to stop taking antidepressants is unfortunately all too common. Not only that does the depression get worse, but many patients report anxiety, nausea, vomiting, tremors, headaches. I mean, it's a whole litany. So, again, as patients start to wonder whether their antidepressants are working for them as they had hoped, the solution is absolutely not to go cold turkey, not to spout cliches, but patients really need to speak to their doctor before they take any steps along these lines.
But it sure makes the issue of efficacy important here. John in Providence, Rhode Island. John, you're on the air.
Tom, it's a pleasure to be on your show.
Good to have you. What's your experience, John?
Well, I've been a long-time sufferer of depression since my early 20s, and I'm 42 now, and it's just come and gone. I was diagnosed as bipolar, type 2, and I've also, had 20 years ago, started having Lyme disease, so those are kind of related, but I struggled going on meds. I just felt like I needed to solve it with religion or philosophy or drugs and booze or being a Grateful Deadhead, something
right,
like that.
But right.
After a while, I ended up, going in and out of the hospital for a period of 8 years off and on, couldn't work. I mean, severe depression like these folks are talking about.
Yep.
But I eventually got on Cymbalta, which is a wonderful medication, and I think a lot of your guests would agree. And now I take some Seroquel, which I've been taking for 5 years, actually, and I haven't been hospitalized in 5 years. I've been functioning. I got married. I have two daughters who are beautiful. And
it's a blessing.
Yeah, it is, Tom. It is. And thanks to all your guests. And the one thing that gets me is just trying to, put it up front in the news and make it look like, people are taking too much medication. I think that's dangerous to do, and I just wanted to say that because I know that the one thing you can't measure, you can measure 13% of people with severe depression, but you cannot measure 100% of people who commit suicide, don't have a chance to try these medications.
Yeah, John, you remind us of just how serious it can be, and we're glad that you found some relief there, and thank you for your call. Sharon, you must feel some of this burden when you try and write about this in the popular press, because people are going to read and, you know, make very important interpretations, calculations of what you lay out there.
Well, absolutely, Tom, which is why, you know, I said over and over, you know, don't stop the medication, and that the illness itself is severely underdiagnosed and undertreated. So there's no easy solution. I mean, the only hope is that as we learn more about whom the drugs work for, how they work, then some of the other options that, you know, Dr. Holland mentioned, cognitive behavior therapy, for instance, has been shown to be equally effective and to have a lower rate of relapse. Again, there are issues of access, but if patients can think of ways other than a pill to help themselves, you know, new vistas might open for them.
One issue in common with both the callers is the notion of the fact that there are different medications that are out there, and that often if one medication doesn't work, another one might be helpful, or often a different dose. So the caller just now, for instance, found that one medication in the end was effective, whereas other ways of approaching his depression was not. And similarly, I would say for the earlier caller who, as mentioned, felt that the antidepressant seems to have had, as Dr. Holland was saying, seemed to have had some help, but maybe not as much as she would like, that and has had side effects, often changing the dose, working with your doctor to do that, and sometimes switching medications may lead to less side effects on a different antidepressant while still getting some of the benefits. So I think those are important issues for people to be aware of as well.
But I wonder if, as a nation, we're not if in many cases the efficacy is the same as a placebo, are we just pretending, Robert Klitzman, that we're treating this depression? And we're not really. We feel like we're treating it because we're prescribing pills. But if they're, you know, if that's their efficacy, maybe we're just deluding ourselves.
Well, there's a few other issues with the placebo. One is it's one thing to be given a placebo as part of one of these studies in which you come in regularly, you are seen by professional staff who ask you how you're doing, you interact with people, you're willing to come. That's not really the same as if you were just to take a sugar pill at home and think that you're getting better. In fact, many people have argued that to be in a study, even if you're just getting a sugar pill and get all that attention and people calling you and following you up, that that's in fact very therapeutic. It's basically a kind of psychotherapy that's going on. So it's not really fair to say that it's the same as just a sugar pill as if you're taking it at home, number one. And number two, again, we know that there's, as I said, very good data for people with serious depression that it clearly works, and for people with chronic depression. And it's just the sort of mild group. And it depends, again, how you define mild. And often people don't know until they try it. It's like if I were to say, well, Tylenol only works for people with severe headaches. Mm-hmm. Well, if you have a headache, should you take Tylenol or not? How severe is your headache? Depression is a very subjective experience. It's a very complex experience. We know, as mentioned earlier, that it involves not just serotonin, but all kinds of billions of cells and synapses and chemicals in the brain. There's recent work that shows, for instance, that antidepressants lead to new cell growth that doesn't happen with other kinds of treatment necessarily. We have no evidence of that. So it suggests that neurons in your brain are actually regrowing and doing things. We have evidence that they work, antidepressants work for stroke. So there's clearly a lot that's going on physiologically. And I would just say the brain is such a complicated organ. We know so little about it still that we're just at the tip of the iceberg in terms of understanding how these chemicals and other approaches may work. And we need to have an open mind in the very least.
Stephen Holland, we've just got 30 seconds before the break. But in brief, are you then saying we should prescribe less if in your study it did not work better than a placebo? Or it's so subtle and nuanced and complicated that even though you found that, we should go right on prescribing?
Not that subtle and nuanced. I think that for folks with less severe chronic depressions, there are other alternatives that don't have side effects, some of which will have more enduring effects than the antidepressants. But still, there are a lot of folks out there that are going to get specific pharmacological benefit that aren't getting prescribed, and we're underprescribing for them. So overprescribing for some, underprescribing for others.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about antidepressants and how they work or don't work, perhaps, better than placebos, and what that means for the American pattern of prescribing antidepressants. Stephen Holland is with us. He's a co-author of the Journal of the American Medical Association article and research that's drawing a lot of attention here. Drew the attention of Sharon Begley at Newsweek magazine. She wrote the big cover story on antidepressants there last week. Robert Klitzman is with us as well. He's a psychiatry professor at Columbia University, has looked closely at all of this. We've got a lot of comments here. Here's one from Facebook, and Sharon, this is from Kate, and she says, I've been on a number of different antidepressants through the years. Some worked, some didn't. If it's all a placebo effect, one would think they would all have helped a similar amount. Sharon, what do you say to that?
Well, possibly, except that depression, like so many diseases, has a sort of natural history. It can get more severe. It can dissipate. Events in your life can cause the depression to come and go. So it's very difficult to reach a conclusion based on any one person's experience. It could be that the times when the antidepressants seemed to work were times when the disease itself was dissipating or when events in her life, added together to cause her depression to become less severe.
Robert Klitzman, here we've got on Facebook, Julie says that I've had several doctors prescribe antidepressants to me over the years as a first option before psychotherapy. Ultimately, she said books and psychotherapy have helped her more than any pills ever have. And we've also got a psychologist here from Portland, Oregon, saying the overuse of primary care doctors to treat mental health disorders is behind the problem here, that they don't do psychotherapy, so they prescribe pills.
Both of those are excellent points. Absolutely, people should consider psychotherapy in conjunction with antidepressants. And most importantly, they should see a skilled mental health provider who can decide what is the best treatment for them and see how it works over time. The problem with primary care docs seeing and treating so many patients with depression is a major problem. You mentioned I wrote a book called When Doctors Become Patients. I interviewed 75 doctors who became patients, and many said that they had depression as a result of medical illness, but had huge difficulty telling their doctor that they were depressed and even confronting it and admitting it to themselves. They would say, you know, my doctor would say, how are you doing? I'd say, fine, not so good. And then finally, after 6 months, I'd be able to say, actually, doc, I'm depressed.
And this is a doctor talking to a doctor.
These are doctors talking to doctors. So they feel uncomfortable with depression, don't really know what to do with it. So it's a major problem. And I should say part of it is because insurance doesn't cover mental health services adequately. And therefore, the only health provider that someone will see who's covered by insurance is a primary care doc. And primary care docs may simply write a prescription. And that's a problem. As the person wrote to Facebook suggests, really a mental health provider needs to decide why is a person depressed. Maybe psychotherapy is best. Maybe a combination of that with medications is best. So again, it needs to be an individual clinical decision.
Let's go to Allison in Nashville. Allison, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm 23, and I've been treated for depression on and off for the past 10 years.
Okay.
That may seem strange to some, but I had some pretty terrible things happen in my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
But I've noticed a marked difference when I am medicated correctly and when I'm not. And I understand what you said about life-changing and things like that. But my question is, is it possible that what we're calling mild depression and severe depression aren't the same disease at all, in the way that a cold is not pneumonia, and that's why we're seeing a difference?
Great question. Stephen Holland, what do you say to Allison in your backyard in Nashville there?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, we don't know exactly where all of these things come from. We don't know what the best ways are to treat yet. And it's quite possible that what we have is a heterogeneous collection of phenomena which don't share the same underlying etiologies and won't share the same necessary treatments. I think as one of the two of the earlier callers suggested, as Dr. Klitzman suggested, there are a number of different medications, and before I gave up on medications, I'd work my way through different medications. There's a number of different psychotherapies. Before I gave up on other kind of treatments, I'd work my way through those. And certainly the fact that on average these things don't seem to differ from one from another doesn't mean that a given individual won't have a much better response to one thing than another thing.
Let's go to Cindy in Williston, Vermont. Cindy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well. What do you think, Cindy?
I have a couple of different points that I kind of wanted to get an idea from your guests.
Yeah.
One of them is I kind of look at how kids are being raised and even some of us as adults and how we're basically raised to handle life's problems and to handle stress and to be able to have the confidence and all of that good stuff to cope with that kind of thing. And do they find that there's an increase in depression over time because of maybe societal changes and how people are being raised, kids, and how I think, you know, some kids are like, we owe them, and they just don't know how to handle themselves, and hence when something, you know, just like what I just mentioned, is did they, I think, I personally feel that drugs are too much, like, a quick fix. People turn to them too much instead of trying to find another alternative, like, you know, exercising. Try to find what works for you. But that kind of ties in with the first part. And are there, the second part of my question is, have they found that there's any natural products that work for depression instead of going to that quick fix pill for any types of depression?
Yep, we got it, Cindy. Let us pick it up. Robert Klitzman, first to you. Cindy's worried that we're just not raising kids to deal with adversity as well these days and substituting, in a way, pharmacology for that. What do you make of that? And then what about nature?
Well, I think there's definitely a temptation to let's look for a quick fix. Who doesn't want a quick fix? But that's not to say, as I mentioned earlier, that millions of people with severe depression won't be helped by them. I think they will be helped by them. I think, though, at the same time, yes, absolutely not everyone who is in mild depression or dealing with life's ups and downs should immediately be put on an antidepressant. So as mentioned earlier, it goes both ways. We're treating many, many people with serious depression, and it's possible that meds are being encouraged or given to people who maybe may benefit in other ways. In terms of natural products, there has been some work done on St. John's wort, for instance, that some studies suggested it works, some studies suggest it doesn't work. There may be some placebo effect involved in that. But I think, again, that certain kinds of psychotherapy can be effective for life's ups and downs. That may be a way of not just doing a quick fix. Again, psychotherapy can take time and effort. And again, not all insurance companies offer it or provide it and can be expensive.
But what about the notion that Cindy raises that there's something that comes before the psychotherapist's couch, something in the way we're living or rearing our children or – you know, in our culture, that's provoking more depression than might otherwise be there?
Well, I think my guess is that the amount of depression out there in society is pretty constant, has been constant. And there are studies that look in other cultures and other countries and find that rates of mental illness, of depression, are about the same if you're in Japan or here or Western Europe. So I don't know if it's anything about American culture per se. I think there are things, for instance, religion, I think, has traditionally helped many people deal with life's ups and downs and may arguably play less of a role in people's lives. On the other hand, you have things like the internet and social networking that may give some degree of support to people when they're dealing with, for instance, getting upset about getting a serious medical diagnosis. So I think that there are other ways of dealing with mild problems. But again, once you hit a severe depression, which we think has more of a biological component to it, particularly, let's say there's a family history or prior history, then I think antidepressants are something worth thinking about.
Let's go to Alice in Huntsville, Alabama. Alice, you're on the air.
Hello, I'm a psychiatrist, and I've done research on antidepressants. I've done dozens of clinical drug trials under the supervision of the FDA and under the supervision of research guidelines, and I can tell you that no drug is approved for depression or panic disorder or social phobia or bipolar or schizophrenia or any of the other psychiatric diseases that I've participated in studies for. It is, a drug will not be approved unless it does separate from placebo. And obviously these are trials in which the patient does not know whether they're getting the sugar pill or the active drug.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor does not know whether the patient's getting the sugar pill or the active drug. And the drug company does not know who's getting which drug until the study is over. So this argument of Ms. Begley's is hard for me to understand.
Well, I'll take it to Sharon Begley. Let me take it first to Stephen Holland, who did the research for the Journal of the American Medical Association.
Yeah.
You hear Alice's complaint. She's done these studies for the FDA. Nothing gets approved unless it's better than a placebo.
She's absolutely correct, and thank God for the FDA. However, what drug companies know, what they don't talk about, but what they know is if you include folks with less severe depressions, you don't get an effect. So they don't include those patients. They market to them, but they don't include them in their trials. And if you look at the Kirsch, who wrote the book that started Sharon Begley out, the looking at these things, went back and looked at FDA submitted trials, and most all of those studies are going to be done with patients who have levels of depression that we'd start talking about as being severe to very severe. Now, if you look at pretty bad depression, people talk about major depression, which is a pretty bad level of depression. About half of those folks, maybe a few more, wouldn't make it into industry-funded trials, and they do that explicitly because they know well enough to know that they're not going to get a separation from placebo. They won't turn around and market. They'll turn around and market to people with less severe depressions, but that's these people aren't dumb.
Sharon, what's your sense of how the medical world has treated this from your research here? I mean, you hear Alice saying, I've done the surveys, they work just fine. We get Steve Holland's explanation for why that happens, but is there a kind of civil war within the medical community about these drugs, or is it just a few outliers who are skeptics?
Well, there's something else that's going on. If the studies that the psychiatrist described having run indeed showed that the active medication, the antidepressant, was superior to the placebo, that's great. However, it turns out that more than half of the clinical trials that have been run on antidepressants showed no such effect, no such separation, as Dr. Holland calls it. And unfortunately, the vast majority of those were never published. So when patients, you know, go online to look at what the research shows, they will not find those studies. As far as the FDA goes, as long as there are a couple of clinical trials that indeed show a medication to be quote-unquote effective, the FDA will approve it. And it doesn't matter if a large number of studies showed no such effect, if the studies failed. And just the final point, the psychiatrist pointed out that patients in these studies don't know what medication they're getting. And that's absolutely true, except there's a good argument to believe that they can figure it out. And by that I mean the medication produces side effects, as we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. So just imagine you're in one of these trials. You're told you'll get either a sugar pill or this new medication that we think might help your depression. We're not going to tell you which one. You start taking the pills. You don't know which one you're on. But then suddenly you start feeling, you know, sexual dysfunction or appetite, you know, symptoms, any of the things that occur with the active medication. And you say to yourself, aha, I'm on the real drug. Mm-hmm. I'm not on the placebo. Mm-hmm. Therefore, your hopes might soar. Your expectation of relief might be much greater than if you figure out you're on the placebo. So that might factor into the finding that, indeed, patients are better off on the active medication than placebo, but it might not be because of the chemical in the active medication.
Mm-hmm. We are subtle creatures here. Yes, is that you, Bob?
Yes, I just wanted to add a quick point, if I could, mm-hmm. Which is, it's important to realize, by the way, with the JAMA article, that it only looked at 6 studies. There have been dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of studies out there. And so we should be very careful, just following up what the psychiatrist said. I think there is one point she's making which is valid, which is there have been a lot of studies out there, and the JAMA article only looked at 6 studies. It included studies where people had less severe depression. And again, there's no question that depression, that antidepressants work for severe depression and also for chronic depression that goes for 2 years. So it's important that we realize that there's a lot out there. I would also say, by the way, in terms of side effects affecting...
No, we understand that, yeah. But this is a country where it seems that, you know, people get prescribed this for all kinds of levels of depression, maybe even circumstances that wouldn't even qualify as depression.
Again, there are 2 issues. There's what should be done and there's what's done. Mm-hmm. So I can't vouch for what doctors are out there doing in terms of giving antidepressants perhaps when they shouldn't be doing so, mm-hmm. And maybe where psychotherapy would be just as good for the patient. But there again, there are people out there who would benefit from these medications and are not getting them. So again, it's a complex story.
Yes,
and
it is.
We need to be careful.
Emily in Ipswich, Massachusetts. Emily, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I was prescribed antidepressants about 20 years ago by a well-meaning nurse practitioner as to help me with the emptiness syndrome. All the kids
okay.
are just
yeah, up. right, yeah.
All right, and so I've stayed on that. I've been not wanting to give it up for over, you know, 15 years, but finally I decided enough. the doctor never did tell me about the side effects that I may experience getting off the drug, which were horrible. They were just awful. And besides that, I'm angry at the television set because it's telling everybody in America what to take, how to take it, and it's the drug companies that are benefiting from this. And I feel used by them because right now I'm off the drug. I feel better than I ever have.
Well, that's lucky for you. What were your side effects coming off the drug, Emily, if I may?
I had horrible, horrible hot flashes. I could not sleep. I mean, hot flashes. My bed was soaked.
Mm-hmm.
And lack of sleep, dry eye, my legs hurt. I mean, they were just awful, and I didn't expect that. And nobody told me to expect it.
Yeah, but as you say on TV, a lot of people will tell you to try it or think about trying it. Stephen Holland, where do you think all this is headed? Are we, as a nation, headed deeper into the pharmacology of treating depression? Robert Klitzman, and as you did, reminds us that a lot of people who need treatment don't get it in this country. But are we headed deeper in? Are we learning that we need to retreat a little bit? What's your bottom line?
Well, I think we're probably going to be a little deeper in still because of the more of the way we've managed our healthcare system. England, where they have a single party payer and they're looking at all the same literature, is putting more money into some of the empirically supported psychotherapies, not because they get any better or worse results from medications, just that there are good data out there suggesting that some of the alternative interventions, interpersonal psychotherapy, cognitive behavioral psychotherapies, also have useful effects. And they're trying to move away from relying so heavily on medications. Earlier caller asked about prevention, and there are indications that things that look like cognitive behavioral or interpersonal interventions also tend to help kids, adolescents, develop the kind of skills that help them keep from becoming depressed. So I think there are clearly signs in there that we could do things in addition or instead of pharmacotherapy. But right now, the way we're set up, most folks have a general practitioner. Most folks don't have access to psychotherapy. So my hunch for market reasons and for economic reasons, we'll be doing more pharmacotherapy, even though the data don't fully support it.
Well, a good learning curve for us today on a complex subject today, and we're grateful for it. Stephen Holland at Vanderbilt University, co-author of the article that's got everybody talking. Thank you for joining us today.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
And Robert Klitzman at Columbia University, director of the Masters of Bioethics program there. Dr. Klitzman, thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
Sharon Begley at Newsweek Magazine, senior editor, a big piece of work that got the issue front and center. Sharon, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.